Your legislators are hard at work right now in the state capitol. As the session moves ahead, a look at what bills could affect us most right here in Northeast Florida. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. And thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. Hope you had a great holiday weekend. We are always live on the radio at 9 and never miss a show. Just download the WJCT app and listen anytime. You can also stream the audio of this show right now live on our Facebook page. Just ahead, the Times Union's Tia Mitchell brings us up to date on everything that's happening in Tallahassee. Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, Culpepper on one big jumbo start for the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp. We'll look at that in sports, plus how the First Coast is exploring a much bigger commitment to clean fuels and how you can learn more about it. All of that and more ahead this hour. But first this morning, the state legislature is in session right now in Tallahassee with lawmakers looking at bills on everything from budgeting issues to standardized testing to medical marijuana and much more. Locally, we're watching how our safety net hospital, UF Health, is going to fare when it comes to funding. And there's also a bill involving gambling that has sparked a lot of interest here in our corner of the state. So what are the biggest bills to come out of this spring session? We've got an update from one of our best contributors, Tia Mitchell. She covers state government for the Florida Times Union and joins us now in studio. Tia, thanks for being here. Normally you're based in Tallahassee. Good to see you in Jacksonville. Good morning.
It's great to be here.
And what are your questions for Tallahassee Bureau Chief Tia Mitchell of the Times Union? The legislature's in session. There's a lot to talk about. Get on the line now, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org or tweets to @MelissaInJax. You can weigh in on our Facebook page as well. Now, you, of course, have been covering the legislature for years. And is there anything, first off, about this session that stands out as different or unusual this time around?
That's a good question. I think that what is a little bit unusual this year is that there is a lot of talk, and it started very early in the session, about whether the House and the Senate were going to be able to reach an agreement on the budget, other key issues. Early in the session, we were already talking about whether we might need a special session later on this year.
Yet again.
So now special sessions, unfortunately, are kind of, that's been more common. There was one just a couple of years ago. But the fact that early, you know, even before the session had even started, we were already talking about a possible special session.
And is that due to the fact, Tia, that the state House and Senate are so far apart? The House is much more ideologically rigid, it seems, just more conservative than the Senate. Is that why these two bodies can't ever seem to agree and pass a budget without an extra special session?
And not just that the House is more conservative, but House Speaker Richard Corcoran, which this is his first session as Speaker, he's very conservative and very rigid ideologically. And he said early on, I'm not going to budge on some of these things where I disagree with the Senate. And, you know, the Senate's saying, well, hey, we're equal partners, so we're not just going to do everything you want to do. And that's really what has people worried.
What are the biggest areas of disagreement in terms of passing a budget? I mean, that is literally the state legislature's only real job in the end, to pass a budget. And they've been unable to do this without a lot of hue and cry and controversy and arguing for several years in a row now.
Yeah, well, there's always kind of push and pull back and forth on the budget. It's always kind of comes down to the wire. There was a special session 2 years ago. This year, what's interesting is even the budget figure, the Senate budget is $4 billion larger than the House budget. And that's, you know, the budget is $80 billion, but that's still $4 billion of spending that the Senate has that the House doesn't. So there's a lot of kind of compromise and discussion that's going to happen over the next 2 to 3 weeks as they try to reach a deal.
Okay. And what are some other big areas you're looking at? For example, hospital funding. Our safety net hospital, UF Health Jacksonville, could see a big reduction. There's even been discussion that if that happens, they could close their doors and we'd be without a safety net hospital in Jacksonville.
That was the fear until last week, the Trump administration notified Florida that it was not only renewing the low income pool program, but it was increasing it almost threefold to $1.5 billion, mm-hmm. which is up from about $600 million last year. So we're still waiting on the details of the low income pool, also known as LIP. Mm-hmm. But that amount alone was enough to make hospitals feel, you know, very confident that they should be okay this year and might even get a little increase.
All right. And if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Tia Mitchell, who covers the state legislature for the Florida Times Union. What are your questions? Because the legislators are in session. The old joke is, be careful, they're in session. They're doing stuff. It's a joke, I know, that you've heard in the newsroom. But the reality is, they are working on bills that could really affect all of us. We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. What else are they looking at that we need to be following closely here in Jacksonville and North Florida? I know there's a gambling proposition you're following as well.
Yes, that's another issue that the House and the Senate, they're going into what we call conference. And conference is what happens when the House and the Senate each pass two different versions of legislation. And then they'll kind of create a little working committee that has House members and Senate members. And so the House gambling bill basically is status quo. The Senate gambling bill is considered an expansion. It creates more gambling in Florida. It does allow slot machines in counties like Jackson, like Duval, uh-huh. that have approved slot machines, which the House, again, has said, we don't like that. So now they're in conference. Actually, as early as today, they could start those meetings to iron out a compromise on gambling.
So bottom line, though, we could be seeing more gambling in Duval County.
We could. If the House agrees with the Senate position, mm-hmm. then counties like Duval that approved the slots referendum could get their casinos.
You're also following higher education spending. That's a big priority this year for Senate President Joe Negron. And what about these bills moving that involve medical marijuana and also the controversy that's been ongoing in the state for a long time over how to deal with standardized testing in K-12 schools?
Yes, all of that is still kind of in debate, winding through the process. The higher education spending is a budget issue now because the Senate has a lot more higher education spending. The House actually requires universities to give back some of the money they have in reserves. Uh-huh. So the House technically cuts university budgets where the Senate increases it. With standardized testing, there are bills moving. The concern from some is that these bills don't really cut testing as much as some lawmakers would like them to. And so that's being debated as well. And then, of course, medical marijuana, they're implementing Amendment 2. But again, the question is, the accusations that has come out from some onlookers is that they're not, you know, adhering to the will of the voters who approved Amendment 2. They're concerned
they're dragging their feet maybe a little bit.
And they're concerned that some provisions are being added to the medical marijuana bill that won't expand it the way it was envisioned when it was approved by voters.
And is that just due to the fact that lawmakers, really, most of them weren't in favor of expanded access to medical marijuana, even though the voters have approved it?
Yes, I think it's because they're, again, conservative lawmakers don't necessarily want, for example, they don't want people to be able to smoke marijuana. They want it to just be in pill form or oil form. There's discussion on how many vendors should be able to sell medical marijuana. And of course, there are different special interests who all have their idea about what that bill should look like.
You're also following a matter involving our local Senator Aaron Bean and an ethics investigation involving his tenure in Tallahassee over money that was funneled through Florida State University's budget and critics charge was improperly funneled back to one of Bean's contacts in Nassau County. What's the latest on that investigation?
So that's been interesting. The Naples Daily News started out looking at this phenomenon of university budgets being used for special projects. And that's how they uncovered this project that's in Nassau County. It's called Florida Psychological Associates. They do mental health screenings. And Senator Bean was the champion. He initially tried to get it just a line item in the budget. That didn't work. The House didn't agree. So that's when Florida psychological associates hired a lobbyist, got their money in the FSU budget. The concern now is, did the contract, did they do what they were supposed to do to get the money that they received? And that is what the House is asking questions about. Florida State University did give documents. The Nassau County company is giving documents. Separate from that are the accusations against Senator Bean that he did not act ethically. But as of right now, there has been no finding that Senator Bean did anything incorrect.
And if the commission does find that he acted improperly, what consequences would he potentially face?
He could be fined. Also, separate from the Ethics Commission, you know, as we've seen here in Jacksonville, there have been accusations of elected officials not acting properly in office, and that has led to their downfall. So, again, but Senator Bean has not been found a wrongdoing. There are no complaints that we know of other than ethics complaints, and those take a while. And again, that would more than likely, if he is found that he did violate any provisions of the ethics code, it would be a fine.
Okay. And if you're just tuning in, it's a special treat on the show as Tia Mitchell is in town. Doesn't happen very often. She's normally in Tallahassee covering state government for the Florida Times Union. She's following everything happening right now in the state capitol because the state legislature is in session. What are your questions? We'll go to your tweets in a moment for Tia, but right now give us a call at 549-2937. Jimmy in Riverside. Hey, Jimmy.
How you doing, Melissa, and how you doing, Tia? A lot of everything you write, I think you're great.
Thank you.
I just have kind of a question about, you know, how do we think our freshman legislators are doing up at Tallahassee right now? You know, I know we got a whole group of new ones right now. My concern about them is, how are they doing when it comes to what's going on with Enterprise Florida and bringing a lot of these new, you know, these new jobs into Jax? If Enterprise Florida goes away, are we going to see, you know, the Amazons of the world not look at Jacksonville the same way? And also, do we know what Kim Daniels is doing? It seems like she's trying to pass a bill that seems like it's going to hit a pretty hard road in the courts with, was it prayer in school? Thanks
okay.
so much, guys.
Great questions. Thanks, Jimmy. Yeah, let's talk first, I guess, about our freshman delegation.
Yes. Duval County, well, Northeast Florida in general, has a lot of freshmen because of the special elections and term limits, and they're doing great. They're all in the House, but that's the thing about the House. The House is top down. So to do great as a freshman, that means put your head down, learn, and don't speak unless spoken to. That's mm-hmm. what is expected of House freshmen. So they are passing bills. Jimmy mentioned Kim Daniels' prayer in schools bill.
And that would authorize more prayer in schools?
It doesn't. I mean, prayer in school is already authorized.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of one of the misnomers out there. What that bill does, according to its supporters, is it makes sure that people, students and faculty, don't get hindered if they wish to pray. It makes sure to make it clear that they are free to pray. I think there still may be challenges, as Jimmy mentioned, but by and large, the bill doesn't really create anything new.
Okay.
And as far as Enterprise Florida in the job situation, that is another area that the House and the Senate do not agree. I do think, however, that
whether to get rid of it altogether, economic incentives to bring companies into Florida.
Right.
Yeah.
They'll visit Florida, will get funding. It's just the amount, and that's a budget question. As far as Enterprise Florida, I do think it's going to be dissolved. Those economic development duties will be shifted to the Florida Department of Economic Opportunity, which is kind of a similar state agency. As far as the incentives, I do think that they're probably going to go away under the Corcoran administration.
And what does that mean for Florida? And what does that mean for Northeast Florida? The business community here in Jacksonville has spoken out pretty vocally about keeping Enterprise Florida, so they do not seem to be on the same page as the legislature on this.
Yes, and this is something that Speaker Corcoran has been very, very vocal and adamant about for years. He's the reason why the Jaguars didn't get funding for the stadium, because he decided that sports teams should not get state incentive dollars. And he's made it clear it's a philosophical thing. I think the reality of the situation will be that certain incentives that businesses use, they will not be available, but there are other local incentives that they can use. And there may be a temporary pause on certain deals under the Corcoran administration.
Calls coming in about Enterprise Florida. Let's go to Jim, also in Riverside. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Melissa. This is Jim Love.
Oh, Councilman Love. Good morning.
Yeah. Good morning. It's really a mistake for the House to gut the Enterprise Florida. It's so important to the state of Florida, and particularly important to Jacksonville. It's brought so many good jobs here, high-paying jobs, and without it, we probably wouldn't have gotten GE, Macquarie, Deutsche Bank. There's a whole lot of businesses that may not have come to Jacksonville or the state of Florida because of Enterprise Florida. They're making a big mistake, and Jacksonville, the city council, has spoken loud and clear that we are for Enterprise Florida, and we've got to change this, and the governor's for it as well.
And, Councilman, why do you think that message isn't getting through?
You know, that's a good question. That's what I was going to ask Tia about. Why is it not getting through? Do you have any answers to that?
Like I said, I think the Speaker Corcoran, it's a philosophical thing. He is against incentives. He believes that those state dollars should be used for things that affect more people. For example, he says, instead of giving GE or Deutsche Bank $2 million, I'd rather put $2 million into public schools where thousands of kids can benefit, or $2 million into roads. That's his argument.
If they don't come here and they are adding to the economy, they're adding millions of dollars in either sales tax or real estate tax and jobs, and it's a ridiculous argument, in my opinion, and to not grow the state of Florida. We'll be one of the few states that doesn't have incentives, and we'll go to the bottom of the stack when these folks that pick out places, these site selectors, we'll go right to the bottom of the stack, and we won't be selected anymore. We won't even be an option. It's really a sad day when this doesn't get funded.
Yeah, Councilman Jim Love, I so appreciate you calling in and expressing that. You never know who's going to call into the show. Thanks, Councilman, and I think thank you for that call. I think the councilman is expressing the view of much of the local leadership here, but is part of this too, Tia, that House Speaker Corcoran has political ambitions of his own. What about that?
I think that actually makes it more interesting, because he is alienating some of the same special interests that he will have to lean on should he run for governor or senator, as people have speculated. So I don't necessarily think that on one hand, it's very populist to say, I want to redirect that money to help the people. But on the other hand, he is, you know, as Councilman Love demonstrated, he is alienating some of the same businesses and industries that he will need, mm-hmm. because it takes a lot of money to run for statewide office.
And some of these interests have long memories.
Yes.
They may not step up on his behalf if this goes through.
Right. I think also, but here's the political calculus involved. Even though the city council really doesn't like what he's doing, they're only going to be so forceful as a body, because he still is House Speaker. He still has a lot of say over the budget, and there are many local projects in the budget. And that's why I think it's hard for a lot of the municipalities, the cities, the counties, even the special interests, the businesses, don't want to be too forceful against Speaker Corcoran, because he's Speaker for this session and next year. And if they make him too mad, then they're concerned that he'll take it out on them in other ways.
Such fascinating insights from Tia Mitchell of the Times Union. What are your questions for her as we talk about the state legislative session? Mary in Atlantic Beach. Hey, Mary, good morning.
Good morning. I understand, Tia, that there is a bill, and I'm sorry I don't know the number, but it was brought by two South Florida legislators to include training for first responders for autism and developmental disabilities. I believe that the senators were Evan Jenny and Perry Thurston introduced autism awareness training for law enforcement officers.
Yes.
It's as part of their 40 hours of continuing education.
Yes.
What is the status of that bill?
So I'm trying to look it up for you because you're right. There is a bill, and this bill is a direct response to the shooting that happened of the unarmed man in South Florida. You know, he was caring for an autistic young man, and that autistic young man was having an episode. And, you know, there's a lot of concern that the police response just wasn't appropriate. So that bill is moving through the process, but I, right off the top of my head, don't know exactly where it is. But if you call me or email me, Mary,
okay.
Uh-huh. And you can Google or find, you know, tia.mitchell@jacksonville.com is my email.
Okay.
I will look it up for you and I'll email you back so you can track it.
Thank you so much, Tia.
Sure.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mary. Peter in Arlington. Hey, Peter. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, so I want to say good morning, Ms. Mitchell. Your articles are one of the few I enjoy reading in the local newspaper. My question is about the bill on charter schools. I think it's 5301. How's that look so far? Thank you.
Oh, yeah. That's an important one involving charter schools. Thanks for that question, Peter. What's the legislature doing right now with charter schools versus public schools?
So there's a lot the legislature is doing with charter schools, particularly in the House. The House budget and the House gambling bill actually increases funding for charter schools. But Peter, what you're asking about is a bill that's been called Schools of Hope. And what this bill does is it changes state law regarding schools that are chronically failing, those that consistently earn D or F school grades. And it pretty much mandates that those schools be taken over and converted into charter schools. It's a very, very controversial proposal. Again, it is one backed by House Speaker Corcoran. You're going to hear his name a lot when you talk about these controversial things in the legislature. And the concern by Democrats and public school advocates is that, number one, that this is an unproven turnaround method, and number two, that it is just another grab to funnel more money to charter schools and away from traditional public schools.
All right. Hope that answers your question. And here's a couple of tweets for Tia Mitchell. Jay tweets the show, shout out to new Representative Tracy Davis and her bill allowing mail-in ballots to be returned to any voting site. It will make voting easier. Is that going to make it through?
That is still moving. There is it needs more hearings in the Senate. But it is moving. And it's interesting because there was one high-profile opponent to that bill, and that's Supervisor of Elections Mike Hogan.
Oh, really?
And so that kind of caused
her former boss.
Her former, well, she...
Or co-worker.
Yeah.
For a little,
when he became,
used to work in that office.
She used to work in that office, and when he became Supervisor of Elections, she moved on. And it became Aaron Bean is the one who actually tried to amend the bill in a way that Representative Davis did not like. And he said, I'm doing this amendment because Mike Hogan asked me to. But Representative Davis said, well, Mike Hogan didn't tell me and neither did you. So it was one of those dust ups in Tallahassee. And Supervisor Hogan believes that the bill, if it required, you know, drop off ballots at early voting sites, that it might be too taxing on the Supervisor of Elections office. But it's pretty popular with everyone else. So folks have kind of on the side tried to talk him down, particularly because he's the only Supervisor of Elections to voice
in the whole state.
In the state to voice. Wow. I'm not saying no one else agrees, but he's the only one to come and voice those concerns.
Interesting. Okay, here's another tweet for you from Katie. What about House Bill 425, vacation rental deregulation? That's a big issue in Florida where lots of people want to come maybe and do an Airbnb.
Yes, that's I get asked that question a lot. So in general, again with the House and Speaker Corcoran, there have been several bills to what we call preempt local law. And what that means is instead of saying your county or your city can set the rules for vacation rentals and rideshare companies like Lyft and Uber, that we're going to preempt that and make a statewide law. And so what she's mentioning is another one of those preemption bills that would create a statewide law for vacation rental. And therefore, it's very unpopular with the cities and counties because they say, you know, Jacksonville Beach might have different rules than Baker County for vacation rentals because they're very different economies. And that's why that bill, I don't think you'll see that type of legislation this year, but the House would like to.
Interesting. Always fascinating to speak with you. And just a few weeks left, correct?
Yeah. Yes.
They're wrapping up soon.
Well, again, theoretically,
if they can get it done,
if
they're wrapping up.
They can get it done. You know, sometimes they've extended session a day or two if they think they're close but not quite there. But if it gets to May 2nd and they're not close at all, they'll probably go home and have to come back. But if all goes well, by May 2nd, we'll have a state budget and everyone will go home for the summer.
She is the Florida Times Union's Tia Mitchell, their woman in Tallahassee. Always great to get your insights. Thanks for being in studio with us.
Thank you.
Much more still ahead later. Culpepper on that record-breaking start for the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp. But up next, how the First Coast is embracing clean fuels and how you can learn more. That's in a moment.
Hendrix Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
I'm Joshua Johnson. Next time on 1A, the case for impeachment. Last year, very few on the left got it right about Donald Trump's political appeal. One professor did predict Mr. Trump would win. Now he's forecasting that the president will be impeached. Professor Alan Lichtman makes his case next time on 1A. Weekdays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Join WJCT at Fort Caroline Timucuan Preserve on April 29th to explore the outdoors for International Migratory Bird Day. Kids will have the opportunity to become a National Park Junior Ranger, hunt for nature treasures, win prizes, and more. Clifford the Big Red Dog will be on hand with National Park Rangers, teaching families about how to preserve existing natural habitats. This fun family event is free and runs from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Go to wjct.org/events for more information.
Welcome back. Well, it's a really exciting and growing sector here on the First Coast. The North Florida Clean Fuels Coalition is working to bring more alternative fuels and energy-efficient vehicles to our region. And this week, you can learn more as they sponsor the Alternative Fuels Vehicle Expo over on the UNF campus. It's a chance to learn all about this. Learn about advanced vehicle technologies that help reduce petroleum consumption, improve air quality, and develop economic opportunities. Jeff Sheffield is executive director of the North Florida TPO. That's the Transportation Planning Organization. And the TPO has moved really aggressively into this. He joins us now with a look ahead to this big event. Good to see you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And you'd be crazy not to be looking at this. Alternative and clean fuels are where this country and the world is going. So on Wednesday at UNF, this is going to be a really exciting expo. What's on tap and what can people learn when it comes to alternative fuels?
Well, this is our fourth time doing this, as the TPO has been working, frankly, for about the last 7 or 8 years now under a model from the U.S. Department of Energy for Clean Fuels Coalition. Mm-hmm. And we've used this expo really as a chance to continue to expose the community and fleet managers and decision makers on the types of vehicles and the types of fuels that are out there. So this event will bring bring together fuel providers and fleet managers and the like to have conversation, to view vehicles. We'll have Teslas out there. We're very pleased this year to have UPS, which is an extremely progressive company when it comes to alternative fuels.
So you'll hear some success stories from UPS about how they're embracing this technology, even the local KIPP schools too, right?
Yeah, there's a lot going on, and UPS is really moving in two directions. They've already moved aggressively into liquid natural gas with their larger trucks here in Jacksonville, and now they're looking to go with compressed natural gas for their single smaller trucks that are delivering. So,
and when we talk about alternative fuels, we're talking natural gas, mm-hmm. propane, autogas, electric cars.
Yes.
This is all manner of fuels. And at TPO, mm-hmm. you for several years now have been working to increase access for people. There are a number of initiatives and that we'd like to share with listeners just mm-hmm. so they realize that this is growing in Jacksonville.
Yeah, we're very excited. We have a certain amount of federal funds that come to us that have some flexibility. And so over the last few years, we've sort of flexed those into this alt fuels arena. And what we've been able to do is we've invested about $5 million over the last few years on various initiatives to help fleet conversion. Mm-hmm. Our feeling is that if we can help create that consumption by fleets, then what you have are private providers that come in and build stations to provide the fuel, and we begin to leverage and create a network. So we've had an opportunity to do fleets and compressed natural gas. We're very pleased with the electric vehicle charging network that we've done in partnership with the JEA, putting out about 25 stations last year. We'll be expanding that into Clay County, Nassau County, and St. John's County over the next year. So we'll probably be looking at upwards of 70 EV charging stations for consumers.
70. And you brought a handy brochure with you. I'm looking at it right now. Mm-hmm. The map of Jacksonville with these charge well stations where you can charge mm-hmm. up an electric vehicle, it's pretty much all over town now.
It is.
So people are – it's a misconception to think that – there is an access mm-hmm. for this type of fuel if you have an electric vehicle. It's there now.
It is. And the way we've kind of laid this out, the natural gas environment are for your fleets. Propane, there's a place for propane, particularly for HVAC and plumbers and workers of that nature. Mm-hmm. And then we really think EV is for the you and me of the world, the folks who want to buy electric vehicle cars. And we've seen that. If you build that network, it does come. And so we've got strong partnerships with the dealerships. We've seen increases in their fleets already. And we've seen tremendous growth in the region, particularly in the EV sector.
How does all this go in accordance with what's called the Regional Alternative Fuels Master Plan?
Yes.
That was developed a few years ago,
correct?
Right?
Yes, under that Alt Fuels Coalition or Clean Fuels Coalition that we have. Again, it brings together public and private sector entities to work together, and they have for about the last 7 or 8 years. So the idea was to develop a master plan kind of addressing each one of these fuels and begin to identify projects that we could implement. So that's how we've been investing the $5 million, is to look towards projects within that plan.
And you've always led with the business, the economic mm-hmm. case for this. How is that progressing, given that the politics around alternative fuels and how they reduce our carbon footprint, they're complicated?
They are, and it's complicated when, you know, the environmental element of that. We have taken the position, although we are actually using federal funds specifically for air quality, mm-hmm. Our message has been much more of the business model. And then the environmental aspects are the beneficiary of that. And so that's what's happened. Alt fuels have been here for a long time, but the costs have met. And so now the business model works for fleets to convert, and consequently we get the benefits on both sides.
In fact, we have official designation from the U.S. Department of Energy as being part of their Clean Cities program.
That's right.
That's pretty exciting.
It is very exciting. It was a hard effort several years to get there, and it's driven by the amount of petroleum displacement. So now we are on task annually to have to produce a report of that displacement, which means we need to continue to grow it, invest in it, and try to continue the conversion.
And full disclosure, North Florida TPO is a title sponsor of this program. I just wanted to mention that. You're at your main facility right in downtown Jacksonville. People may not realize what a huge footprint you have overseeing transportation networks all over this region. It's a huge area, and you guys are basically in charge of making sure everything combines well and flows smoothly.
Yes, we do. We've advanced a lot into the technology environment now, and have a 25,000 square foot transportation management center housing all of our first responders. So the ability to manage signals, help with congestion and commuting, particularly on those roadways that we didn't have the ability to widen necessarily.
With all of that said, Wednesday at UNF's University Center, people can come out for this expo. Yeah. And even if they're just interested in the new cars, they can come out.
There's a lot of cool stuff to see. I think it's 8:30 to 11:30. It's at the University Center in North Florida. And yeah, there's an opportunity. I know last year there was an opportunity to drive some electric vehicles. I'm going to say that is the case this year. I can't guarantee that at the moment.
I'm sure there'll be some interest in that. I'd like to try that too. I've never had the chance to do that. But just go to NorthFloridaCleanFuels.com. No fee, but register for this Wednesday's big event, the Alternative Fuels Expo on the UNF campus Wednesday morning, all morning on the 19th. Jeff Sheffield, Executive Director of the North Florida TPO, joining us. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And a little later on, Culpepper on the big start this season for the Jumbo Shrimp. But right after this, don't miss the live in-studio performance as some talented local kids get ready to take the stage at Florida Theater.
Very best of modern folk and acoustic alternative music tonight on String Theory. Listen to String Theory this evening at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT. Tune in, find out.
In 1923, the wealthiest people per capita in the world were the Osage Indian tribe in Oklahoma, thanks to oil deposits on their land. On the next Fresh Air, David Grand talks about the serial murders that followed as local whites targeted the Osage for their money.
Here was a population being systematically murdered one by one.
His new book is Killers of the Flower Moon. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Hi, this is Chris Thiele inviting you to join us this weekend for a Prairie Home Companion from the Pasadena Convention Center with our guests Ryan Adams, Casey Musgraves, Justin Hurwitz, Mr. Kevin Nealon, also the Royal Academy of Radio Actors, Tim Russell, Serena Brooke, and sound effects man Fred Newman, of course. Ms. Aoife O'Donovan will be there. My Song of the Week and much, much more, all right here.
Saturday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
My eyes, I can't tell.
Welcome back. Well, it's a record-setting start for the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
Did you come out for the homestand with the new Jumbo Shrimp? Here with more on those record-setting numbers and more sports news and notes, it's our own Cole Pepper here in studio. Hey, Cole.
Good morning, Melissa. Yeah, we talked a lot about the impact that the rebranding would have on the business of the Jumbo Shrimp. And admittedly, it's still very early, but the first home series of the season would have to be considered an unqualified success. Over the course of five games, the Shrimp drew over 41,000 to the baseball grounds. That's the most in a series in the history of the baseball
Amazing.
Ground. Shrimp also drew an opening night sellout of 10,477, which is the largest for a Southern League baseball game at that park since 2012, and the largest opening night crowd since the first ever opening night at the ballpark back in 2003. Has it really been since 2003 that the baseball grounds has been open? It seems like just yesterday, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does.
Merchandise sales were strong, and concessions obviously do very well when you have a lot of people in the park, so certainly a big win for the Jumbo Shrimp. Now, that being said, Jacksonville loves the new big thing.
Of course. It's a new, bright, shiny object.
Yes. And it remains to be seen if it sustains through the summer, but they're certainly off to an impressive start.
You got to give a tip of the jumbo shrimp cap to Ken Babby, the guy that came down here from Washington, D.C., used to work for the Washington Post, bought this team, gave it a new logo, new mascot. Everybody kind of howled and screamed when he came out with this thing. And there, it was pretty controversial. But now, what do you think? I mean, it seems as though people have sort of embraced this.
Yeah, there are still those who don't like it. They're, you know, let's call them baseball conservatives or old school or what have you. But there are more that do. And it has certainly done, in the short term, what it was intended to do, which is to, you know, a rebrand is supposed to tell you, hey, this is new and different. Now, there are a lot of things that are the same about going out to a Southern League baseball game. You know, the game on the field is the same. That didn't, that wasn't changed. But sort of the approach that they're taking, in particular, the last couple of years as the team was being prepared to be sold, you know, you after you have somebody say, yeah, I'm going to buy your house, you don't then start a new addition, right, or renovate the kitchen. Mm-hmm. So you operate a little bit differently. And with new ownership coming in, they put a lot of money into it, and it certainly does appear to be you know, paying some dividends for
them. Do you think the fan experience has seen a real upgrade? Do you feel a difference?
Well, you know, again, just five games, and when you have that many folks in there, it's going to feel like a bigger event. So that's one thing. The way they are operating certainly started last year. So there has been a change in a lot of different ways in terms of, you know, some of the food and different offerings that they have at the ballpark. So there has been a change in the way things are going. And I think if you go there multiple times, you'll probably be able to tell a difference, more so than maybe just the single appearance. You may go there, you may or may not notice a big change depending on how much you're paying attention to baseball and how much you're paying attention to everything else that happens in the park.
Right. Okay, let's talk more sports. The Armada, what's going on with our soccer team?
Well, the Armada certainly knows something about hot starts at the turnstiles from their first year. Now they're experiencing a hot start on the pitch. Three games into the season, the Armada have not conceded a goal and remain unbeaten and in first place after a 0-0 draw with the San Francisco Deltas on Saturday at Hodges Stadium on the UNF campus. Sometimes 0-0 can be a real bore.
I know, right?
This one actually had some intrigue. 4 minutes in, a San Francisco player kicked an Armada player, and it stayed intense most of the rest of the game. Even though the cities are 2,800 miles apart, could be the start of a rivalry. The Armada really haven't developed that real blood rivalry with another team in the North American Soccer League, so who knows? We'll see if this becomes that. But the Armada in first place. They travel to New York this weekend to play the Cosmos, then are back home a week from Saturday to face Indy 11.
And you've got news about the NBA and the NFL draft.
Yeah, Florida Gators junior forward Devin Robinson is leaving Gainesville for the NBA draft. This happened last year where he declared, then had a foot injury and sort of made him rethink his thoughts. Robinson was a key part of the team that went to the Elite Eight, but a lot of the mock drafts don't even have him being drafted in the first two rounds. It's only a two-round NBA draft, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Devin Robinson in terms of his professional career.
Last but not least, the NFL draft now just 10 days out, and how are the Jaguars falling in all of this?
And they start their off-season workout programs today. Jaguars have the fourth pick in the first round. On Friday, we'll hear from Tom Coughlin, Dave Caldwell, and Doug Marone at the annual pre-draft luncheon. We may get a little more insight into what the Jaguars' plans are. I wouldn't hold my breath on that, by the way. Tom right. Coughlin, usually very good at not divulging strategy and information. Next Monday, I'll make my prediction about who the Jaguars will take in the first round. But we know, historically speaking, that Coughlin likes to draft to build a team, quarterback, left tackle, right tackle, and defensive end. There's probably not a quarterback that makes sense at number four. There's probably not a left tackle or right tackle who makes sense at number four. So I really think that if they had their druthers, they would find a defensive end, a pass-rushing defensive end in that first round. There are some guys who certainly fit there. The two best might be gone 1-2, and it could be 1-2-3 in terms of the best defensive ends in the draft. So the Jaguars might be having to reconsider a strategy that does not include that position with their first-round pick just because the three best candidates would be gone. Then they might go running back or another position.
We'll follow it, and next week we'll get your picks. I can't wait to hear. You usually have really good timing on this stuff. He's Cole Pepper. Follow him on Twitter, at Cole Pepper. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, Melissa.
We'll be right back. Don't miss it. It's a live performance from this week's Rising Stars Talent Show. That's next.
On WJCT's radio reading service at 8 a.m. weekday mornings, it's 3 hours of news, op-eds, and obituaries from your local newspaper. Here's a call we received from someone who listens online.
I'm very happy to tell you that my daughter found the app for the radio reading service on my tablet, and I'm using that, and it's excellent. I enjoy all the programs.
If you're living with blindness and want to hear what's in the paper, go to wjct.org/radio reading, underwritten by Florida Eye Specialists.
Presenting Next Avenue, the website from WJCT created specifically for adults discovering life after 50. Visit us at wjct.org/nextavenue. It's where grown-ups keep growing. Sponsored in part by AARP. Real possibilities.
From jazz to indie music, listen to After Hours Monday through Friday at 9 p.m. only on 89.9 FM. Your community, your world, your music.
And welcome back. Finally, this hour, dozens of at-risk students will take the stage this week at Florida Theater for the Rising Stars Talent Show. Students across the city will showcase their talents at this unique fundraising event hosted by Communities and Schools of Jacksonville. We've got a preview and a performance right now as we welcome Aaron Mangan, Director of Resource Development for Communities and Schools. Good morning.
Good morning.
And with his guitar, Elijah Heppner. He's a student at Frank H. Peterson Academies of Technology. Elijah, good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
Elijah's going to perform in a moment, but first, Aaron, this is a benefit for Communities in Schools. What's going to be happening?
That's right, Melissa. It's a really, really unique event where we're in our second year where we're going to take students who participate in Communities in Schools program, and they're going to perform their talents on the Florida Theater stage. So for them, this is a really cool opportunity to be in the same place that Elvis performed and Tina Turner.
Sure.
And we'll have a cocktail hour in the beginning with a silent auction and hors d'oeuvres. And then we'll move into the theater where you'll see 10 acts perform. There's singers, there's dancers, and there's a comedic duo. So it's definitely going to be a really awesome show.
Okay, excellent. And this is all Thursday night. This benefits CIS. You provide services for thousands of struggling students across Duval County. This is a great initiative.
It is. We work with students who are considered at risk of dropping out of school. From kindergarten through 12th grade, we provide case management, after-school programs, and literacy tutoring. So our main goal is to help students overcome any challenges or barriers they might have to graduation.
You can learn more and get your ticket for Thursday night at cisjax.org/risingstars. One of them is Elijah Heppner, a student at Frank H. Peterson Academies of Technology. You're going to be performing Thursday?
Yes, ma'am.
And what are you going to give hear us right now here in the way of a preview?
The song, you know, that I wrote basically is, for one thing, from my heart. And another thing is just an outreach message. The chorus that you're about to hear in a minute is, you know, I'm looking for an answer, a cure to my cancer. And I performed this song actually at St. Vincent's Hospital. We went with CIS group. We did care packages for the patients there. And I did it, and I didn't realize how much the impact that it made until Ms. Foster was like, yeah, there's somebody crying in the corner when you're playing this song. And I was like,
I can't wait to hear it.
And I was like, you know, okay, you know, this is, I'm going somewhere with this. And I just, you know, hope y'all enjoy it. And hope y'all appreciate the song.
Have this burden on my soul, I just can't seem to let it go. This affliction keeps blinding my own vision. I can't see in front of me, and it's like walking through a storm where I can't see beyond my own footsteps, while drenched in rain, full of pain, blinded from the world. Every day's just the same. I am looking for an answer, the cure to my own cancer. And I've been looking for so long, but just can't seem to find the answer to the question that leaves me blind. I've been traveling thousands of miles, a journey that I've been on for a while. So many people I have trusted with my life, they turned their backs on me and let me go and pass me by. My heart's been shattered in thousands of pieces. Wonder why, but have no reason. I am looking for an answer, the cure to my own cancer. And I've been looking for so long, but just can't seem to find the answer to the question that leaves me blind. Oh, leaves me blind. Who is this man walking in front of me?
It's Elijah Heppner, everybody. Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Go see Elijah and Other Rising Stars Thursday night at Florida Theater, a benefit for communities and schools of Jacksonville. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. 1A is up next. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. See you then.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.